Support this podcast and keep us going. Go to everydaynovelist.com/support to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 795.
Today we hear from Scott, who asks,
why have publishers pushed the marketing department onto the shoulders of the writers as opposed to other aspects of the publishing process? For a while there, it used to be that if you didn't have some kind of online presence, whether it was X amount of Twitter followers or so many hits on your blog, publishers didn't want to deal with you. While that seems to be a little better now, the general concept still seems to be there. What if a writer is just plain bad at self-promotion and marketing, but excels in other areas? For example, my mind is much better suited to learning and understanding print layout and formatting it than it is at anything related to marketing. I would much prefer a traditional contract that stated that I had to provide the exact layouts for the print and ebook runs and even record and/or edit the audiobook for them rather than do the marketing. And yet, it seems like marketing is the requirement the publishers push onto the writer. Why?
Well, it is a little baffling until you start to look at the game theoretics of the issue. The publishing business is a throw spaghetti at the wall business, or the technical term is a Pareto distribution business, which means that they understand that almost all of their profit is going to come from 1% to a tenth of 1% of their catalog. So their interests lie in acquiring as many properties as possible for as little money as possible, so that when they catch lightning in a bottle, they will be in a position to profit enough to keep the enterprise going. That's also why they try to grab all the film rights and everything else, because sometimes an obscure book that isn't doing very well will still land on the desk of someone who wants to make a movie of it, and that mere interest can lift it above the fray, so they then get to double dip. And of course, if they have a bestseller and the film rights sell, then they also get to double dip. So it's a win-win for them and a lose-lose for you. Now, one of the things about a business like this is that the layout and the editorial and things like that, those are all fixed costs. Publishing companies can't really save money on that by outsourcing it to the author. For one thing, there's a quality control issue. They would likely spend as much on quality control if they made that a general policy as they would on having in-house layout staff. Another is a brand consistency issue. For a throw spaghetti at the wall business, you have to have dependable brand consistency so that everything in the catalog has a roughly equal chance of hitting and it doesn't turn people off because of its presentation. And the easiest way to do that is to have a house style guide and a house spelling guide and all that sort of stuff, so you know that the baseline of the product you're putting out is pretty solid. These are fixed costs because they have those people on staff regardless of whether they're working or not, so they have to use them. So it doesn't save them any money to outsource those things to you. Marketing, on the other hand, is a highly variable cost. It's a creative activity, and that's where they can save a lot of cash. That's where the risk comes in for them. They will put marketing dollars behind books that do one of two things, that raise the prestige of the publishing house, or that they think, for some reason, based on their own internal data, based on their experience, whatnot, that they think have a very good chance of catching the zeitgeist, becoming a bestseller, whatnot. Those books, they'll put money behind. Otherwise, what they want to do is offload as much risk as possible onto you. It's all upside for them. If you don't do a good job marketing your book, they're not out very much money, especially with the advances they're paying now. And with the contracts that they're writing, even though they're not out very much money, they still have that upside exposure if your book catches the imagination of an influencer or of a filmmaker or someone like that, or happens to catch the zeitgeist, even if you don't do any marketing on its behalf. Now, if things are really tight and they're feeling really mercenary, they will then further reduce their risk by only buying books from people who have a significant enough public presence and a significant enough facility with that public presence that they don't actually need the publisher in the first place. Not that they're going to let the person know that, because those people they know, because they have an existing platform or whatnot, are going to push the book regardless, and that book will catch on with their existing audience regardless. And so the publisher is in a no-lose situation, period, with books like that. And they make sure of it by paying an advance that is less than half of what they expect they would eventually need to pay for the entire royalty run of the book. That way, if something goes horribly wrong, they're still doing okay. They still will earn out. That's basically how the business works. Now, from the publisher's point of view, it's a brilliant business. This is also how all film studios, all record companies, everything else works. From the publisher's point of view, what they're doing is they're essentially buying the equivalent of a lot of stock options. There's a one-time sunk cost and then an exposure to the potential upside, and they understand that most of those options will expire either when copyright ends or because the terms of the contract make it expire without producing any significant cash flow. But by spreading their options out over a wide enough field in a genre and by building a reputation as a publisher, they create a system that, on balance, will always win. It's like a casino, right? There's gambling in a casino, but the gambling is really only being done by the marks, not by the casino itself. The casino knows through mathematical certainty that they're always going to come out ahead on almost everything. The places where they can get cleaned out by sheer luck are the roulette table and some of the card games where the house plays against the mark. And those are the places they most heavily police for severely curtailing the ability of people who are very good at those games to take the house for a ride. Craps is the other one. So, from the author's point of view, you know, it was never a great deal, but it used to be a doable deal, because the contract terms were more favorable, and because there was no alternative. Unless you wanted to sink several tens of thousands of dollars into basically building a publishing company and a distribution system yourself. When Amazon opened up KDP and started integrating CreateSpace into the Amazon store and getting it broader distribution, and then when Ingram Spark opened up and got you distribution to paper channels, and then all the competitors from them rose up, that broke the distribution bottleneck at the New York publishers, and so all they've got left to trade on is prestige and logistics. If you have a book that is very likely to be a bestseller, there is still an argument to be made, very thin one, for going to a traditional publisher because they handle all the logistics, and you don't have to worry about the publishing end of things. And for some people, that is a decent trade-off as long as they can get their contract terms about the IP dispensation to work out in a way they're willing to live with. Just about everybody else, unless you get an extraordinarily good contract or you're getting access to a guaranteed audience that you couldn't otherwise get, it's no longer a good deal because you can get most or all of the upside with none or very little of the downside by doing it yourself, assuming that you learn to do it yourself competently, and that's the trick. And that's what we're all learning here, and everybody's got a different piece of it, which is one of the reasons that the questions coming in and the comments and the feedback are so valuable for everybody, not just for me, but me included. And that's part of what I get out of this show, too. So that's the basic game theoretics of how the publishing business works. With all of that in mind, the short answer to your question of why do they do this is because it is an optimal risk reduction strategy from their point of view, and you, as the author, don't really matter much in their plans. So, there you go. Hope that helps. Thank you for the excellent question, and I will see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.